The Florida community of mindfulness is happy to make these talks available to you. If you find this talk to be a benefit, please consider making a donation to support us. You'll find a donation button on the talks section of our website, floridamindfulness.org. Thank you, and may you be happy and free of suffering.
Good morning, everyone. We're all so polite this morning. I like that. The reason I'm sitting in a chair and not up on the usual is kind of hurt my back a little bit. So as any of you who have, you know, dealt with back problems, you know you want to kind of baby it. So I want to continue our discussion of these last few weeks. Terms of our initiative around nourishing our well-being, and now the initiative of, or the nutriment of sense impressions. But before I talk about it, why don't we just kind of approach it from the inside out, rather than how we usually approach things, which is from the outside in. You know, we begin in our heads and conceptualize, and which is fine. But let's since we're in the meditation hall, so if everyone just close your eyes. And again, like we were doing earlier, just relax your minds, be at ease. And just for a moment, imagine that you lived sort of in this place, where it is, where you are sort of in your mind now. Perhaps it's you can consider it a house, but the blinds are down. So you're basically living in this house. And it's not absolutely dark, but it's not light. And there's absolutely no furniture. And there's basically nothing going on. It's peaceful. There's really no stimulation at all. You can't see out. And everything inside is kind of empty, spacious, and there's basically nothing going on. So just for a moment, imagine kind of that's where you are. That's where you begin. So please, and again, it feels okay. You don't really, you've never been out, you've never been into the world, you've never gone out the door, open the windows. So in a certain sense, you don't know better, but it's okay. You're comfortable. You're at ease in this kind of empty, non-stimulating environment. Just imagine that. So just kind of relax for a moment into kind of just kind of in your imagination what that could be like. And now you one day kind of begin to notice that you have a body. So just notice that you have a body. Kind of be aware that you are in a body. And kind of just feel yourself around it. Inside, skin, coolness of the air against your skin, just sensations in your body, pleasant, unpleasant. Kind of awaken to the reality of that you kind of have a body that can sense itself, can feel itself. So it's like a whole new discovery for you. And then imagine now, move your attention to your mouth, and begin to notice, your tongue, and begin to notice that you have tastes in your mouth. Like right now, you may have a pleasant taste, an unpleasant taste, a neutral taste, but just become aware that you have all kinds of sensations in your mouth and tongue, the same way you had in your body. And then you sort of move up your face a little bit and you discover you have a nose, and that nose smells. And all of a sudden you may begin to notice odors. Again, some that appear pleasant to you, some that appear unpleasant to you, and some that are neutral. Sort of like, this is like an awakening you're having, coming out of just a kind of neutral but yet peaceful place. You're discovering that you have senses. Your body feels and has sensations. Your mouth, your tongue feels, has sensations. Your nose feels, has sensations. And then you kind of move over to the side of your head a little bit on either side, and you discover that you have ears. And you can hear sounds. Like right now, you can hear the sound of my voice or the sound of someone coughing. You can maybe even hear, just if you listen closely, just a little hum from the fans. But all of a sudden you realize, oh, I have ears that hear. They hear sounds, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. And finally, and quite significantly, you wander over to where these windows are, and you see they have blinds, and you pull them up, and you look out to the world. So please, everybody, open your eyes. So you now have fully kind of awakened to your senses, right? You have a body that feels pleasant, unpleasant, a mouth that tastes, a nose that smells, ears that hear, and eyes that see. We can say that through your senses, you are entering the world of experience. Is that clear? Before, you didn't have any real experiences. You were just in a very calm, neutral place. But now, we're kind of coming out of that, and we enter the world of experience, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting. But it's all very simple, isn't it? You're just looking, just hearing, smelling. You know, very, very simple. But you also then have something else that begins to be activated. You have a thinking mind that begins to label and perceive and think about all these things that you're sensing, hearing, smelling, tasting, seeing. Is that clear? Can you see? So, and now it's through these senses that you enter the world. That's the way all of us do it. That's how we enter the world. Otherwise, we're just awareness. But our senses, the five senses plus the sixth sense, which is the thinking conceptual mind, now begins to enter the world in a more active way. Right. And it begins to see and smell. It's like all of a sudden sees things and smells things. You see, it's objects. Is that clear? Just take it slowly. Now, the interesting thing is, remember way back when, before our senses awakened, and we were just in the house, we were very peaceful, weren't we? Right. We kind of didn't know better, did we? We were very peaceful and at ease in that, just being there. But now, wow, right? There's a lot going on out here. And some of it looks kind of attractive. Some of it looks a little repulsive. Some of it we're really not interested in. So we begin to enter the world, right? And what do we move toward? We move toward those things that we're attracted to. And usually we're attracted to them because we think they're going to give us a pleasant experience, right? We move away from things that we think are going to give us an unpleasant experience, right? And then the things that are neutral, we sort of just ignore or go through, right? Now, something else is going on, you see. We've kind of lost that peaceful, at ease, calmness that we used to have. So there's a little bit of missing something. There's a little bit of something's not right, right? But you don't know what it is, do you anymore? Because you've left that, and now you're out here in the world of all the objects of your senses. And you look and you see, oh, but hold on, when I have a pleasant experience in the world through my five senses, how do I feel when I'm kind of in that pleasant cessation? How do I feel? Good. Sort of like I used to feel. Remember? When I didn't have anything. I just had my mind's awareness. But I realized, oh, in the moment when I have a pleasant sensation, for that moment, that underlying kind of missing, dissatisfaction, not being at ease, is gone. What a wonderful discovery, isn't that? Right. So, then something begins to happen, which is, oh, you know what I want in life? More pleasure. More pleasant experiences. Right? And the more pleasant experiences I have, the better I feel in the moment, and the less unpleasant I feel. So now, what was kind of just kind of stumbling around or just kind of moving now begins to be a little more directive. We begin to crave things. We begin to desire things. And that craving and that desire in and of itself is what? Uncomfortable. Right? So, you know, rather than thinking, well, maybe I just got to stop craving, maybe that's the problem. No. We think the problem is what? I haven't gotten what I want. It'll give me pleasure. So we kind of ramp it up, don't we? We kind of ramp up the craving and desiring and the going after. Is that clear? All right. So that's, you know, we're dealing with this idea of nutriments and for this month of sense impressions, but we have to understand how we enter the world of sense impressions and how we go about going after them and what's really underneath it. Now, there's another problem here. It's just not like we're running around just kind of in the moment, you know, running after pleasure and running away from that which is unpleasant, right? Sort of what we call normal life, that's what most people are doing, even if they don't know it. But see, there's another whole part of our mind that we are unaware of. In Buddhism, Buddhist psychology, we call that our storehouse consciousness. And this is really key, because it's not like we're just running around having experiences, pleasant and unpleasant, right? In the moment, trying to satisfy this underlying line, trying to get rid of or satisfy this underlying not sense of being okay. But everything we do leaves an impression in our storehouse consciousness. Leaves an impression in our storehouse consciousness. We're not aware of that. We're just aware that in the moment, I'm doing something, positive, negative, whatever, and it seems perfectly right to me, doesn't it? Right? You know, we think whatever we're doing is perfectly right. But we don't realize that everything we're doing, thinking, acting, whatever, is leaving an impression in our storehouse consciousness. Many, 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 many different kinds of impressions. But a lot of impressions over time that have a similarity begin to coalesce into something stronger than just an impression. Kind of like they become a formation within our storehouse consciousness, because there have been so many like it that are similar to. Now, we're not aware of our storehouse consciousness, right? Because we're up here living in the conscious world, aren't we? And yet we may wonder, where do these feelings, these deeper kind of feelings, come from? These days we call them depression, anxieties. We may call them, a heaviness. Right? That I, why is it that I just feel this way? You see, I mean, many people say, well, outwardly, everything's okay. I got a good job. Or why is it that I feel this way? It doesn't often seem connected to what's going on, because it's really the culmination of these impressions in our storehouse consciousness that we're not even aware of, that are very deep. Why do I move in this direction? People say, why do I sabotage myself? Why do I make wrong choices? Why do I have these feelings? Everybody know what I'm talking about. And you wonder, why is that? Up here I understand. You see, we're all very good up here. But we wonder, why? Well, it's coming from our store. In Buddhism, it's our storehouse consciousness, our alaya vijnana. That's what's conditioning us. And in what's called the Yogacara tradition, and I think when I've taught this before, the example is of an eggplant. Everybody know what a big eggplant is? And you notice, that little kind of green part at the top, like the cap, but then the large black part. Okay. So the example is our conscious mind is the green part, you see? And the big black part is our alaya. See, that's big, because that holds all our experiences, And that is why, for many of you who are involved in the process of change and transformation, and you read, you do this, you do that, it's like, why is this stuff still in me? You know what I mean? Why do I still wake up with it every morning? Or why does it, Well, it's because, it's your conditioning that is deep in the storehouse consciousness. Okay? So I'm kind of working my way toward this second nutriment of sense impressions. On Friday night we had a panel here on, it was called Healing the Earth or something, or our planet. Very nice topic. Transitioning toward a plant-based diet, and I was on the panel, and a lawyer from sort of the animal rights area of life was there, and a physician. But I just want a local physician who's head of cardiology at the VA, and he's a he's a cardiologist, but he's kind of a stent man. You know, he does the mechanics. He's sort of an engineer. And at the VA, he does a lot of them, day after day. And he said a lot of interesting things, but one of the most interesting things to me was he was not a physician who sort of came from any kind of sense of any kind of consciousness of holistic. You know, a lot of physicians now have a very different, you know, much more holistic way of looking at life or lifestyle. He was not that at all. He was just a kind of physician and very good at what he did. And so he's just, you know, day after day, seeing patients at the VA, you know, and putting in stents. And he said one day he was kind of looking at, you know, kind of preparing, I think he was preparing for the day and looking through all the files of the patients that he was going to see. And he noticed, you know, across the board, you know, all had obviously heart issues, blood pressure issues, cholesterol issues, diabetes issues. And he thought, you know, this is interesting. He said, statistically, in our culture these days, he was saying smoking, he said it's only 10% of the population, way down. You know, people are exercising more. I forget, he kind of looked at what the usual markers are and saying, you know, those markers that used to be, that we see as contributing to disease are really coming down, and yet, you know, heart attacks, cancer, you know, or like diabetes are just keep going up and up. So rather than continuing, he stopped and thought, there must be some other cause, right, that the medical world is not looking at, that's causing such a profound physical distress in people. Is that clear? And this is how he began to do research and all that. He ended up very much going, it's all about diet. It's all about diet, and especially meat products, etc. But I'm not going to go there. But the methodology is the methodology I'm talking about. We are here, each of us, in the condition of our bodies and our minds. And we experience it daily, personally, interpersonally, in relationships, and yet we often have no insight into what's causing it. Why am I the way I am? Why do I feel the way I do? Is that clear? And so, I think what the Buddha did 2,600 years ago when he taught this in a sutra, these four nutriments, was kind of just seeing that a human being, their body, mind, is totally conditioned by what they consume, physically, mentally, and most importantly, experientially. What are we doing? What am I feeding my body? What am I feeding my mind? Because in the same way, what I'm feeding my body has a lot to do with the condition of my body, healthy, unhealthy. What I am feeding my mind, the kind of experiences I'm having, is conditioning my mind. Is that clear? So in this teaching of the four nutriments, he began with edible foods, and we know we've spent in our community many months now working around, you know, looking at the way we consume, and also how we take care of our bodies, the physical, you know, exercise and sleep and, you know, drugs, alcohol, you know, the things that we consume, and whether the things are wholesome, unwholesome, healthy, unhealthy, contribute to the well-being of our body, mind, or else are toxic to it. And now we're in the second impression, and I spoke more generally about it a couple of weeks ago, and Betsy did last week, you know, this whole idea of that from morning till night, through our senses, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching. We are consuming experience. And that those experiences we have, whether they're wholesome or unwholesome, are conditioning our mind. It is the nutriment. It is feeding us. Is that clear? And so we have to then be very mindful, very aware of what we're taking in. Because what we're taking in is not just going out. What we're taking in is leaving an impression in our storehouse consciousness, which is then conditioning how we will be in the future. Right? So if we want, obviously, to be, to have a wholesome mind, to be happy, to be calm, to be peaceful, to be loving, to be this, we need to give our, we need to have experiences that nurture that, so it leaves those kinds of impressions in our storehouse. In the same, we need to be very much aware of how we're conditioning our mind in an unwholesome way through our experiences. You know, and I touched on 2 weeks ago, and I think Betsy really went very much into it, the whole world of our devices. And I won't go into that today. Betsy did it quite well. And, we're planning over these coming weeks to provide our community with a process whereby we can look, at the frequency and duration of our device use, and then really looking at, where we're going in terms of the sites we're visiting, and then how that's conditioning us, right? And that there's really, in a certain sense, there's nothing that doesn't have an effect on us. So I don't want to talk about that today, but I think that's just one very prominent example in our lives where these days we are very, very, very involved with electronic devices and spending lots of time at work and non-work, actually probably the predominant part of our day, on a screen. And what we are consuming through those experiences are conditioning our mind. Do not think that they're not. As well as by spending more and more time having experiences that may not be toxic, some could be, because of what they're bringing up in us, but are even neutral. They may be preventing us from having types of experiences that are actually wholesome, that actually could be conditioning our mind in the way that we want to be. I mean, I know this is very simple. And remember, we came back to, remember where we started. We begin with a very open, spacious place. You can almost think of yourself as an infant, as a young child with a very empty mind. But slowly they enter the world. How do they enter the world? Through their experiences, through their senses, and slowly their mind begins to be conditioned by the nature of those experiences. So I think a very true aspect of our modern culture is there are just endless ways that we can endlessly pursue pleasant experiences to obviate, to lessen, to remediate the underlying dis-ease, the ill-at-easeness that is underlying our own experience in life. That sense of that we have lost our connection. We have lost our connection with who and what we truly are. That inner sense of just that everything is perfect just as it is. If you've been around an infant, you know they have a capacity of being okay. As long as their needs are met, their very simple basic needs, they're okay. But we've lost that underlying sense of okayness. And so we wander in the world of our sense impressions looking, you know. So we take food. Probably the most primal craving we have, right? Because our bodies want to survive. They want to eat. So we take food and we turn it into what? In our society. An object of what? What? An unending pleasure. Right? Unending pleasure. It's no longer just about, you know, eating healthy, satisfying food. It's about endless pleasure in everything. And how do we know it's pleasure? You know, I mean, you go to restaurants today, you're not quite sure if it's about the taste or about the presentation. Have you noticed? I mean, it's like you know, oh, presentation means it's pleasing to what? The eye. Right? You know, and it's very hard to walk into a restaurant today that doesn't have something playing in the background. Right? Music. Oh, pleasant to the ear. Right? Might have a certain kind of aroma or something, you know, aroma, you know what I mean? And then the food and the presentation, it's all there to make what? Pleasure, pleasant, indulging the senses. Right? Please notice that that's what it's all about. And so we have a what? We have a very pleasure experience. And then we drink some this, and which is very pleasurable and makes us feel very what? In the moment, very what? Pleasurable. Right? And then we have pleasant conversations with pleasant people. And it's like we go, this, you know, I mean, this, could anything be better than this? Right? And yet, unfortunately, what happens? It comes to an end. Right? We can't stay there forever. The conversation doesn't go on forever. It comes to an end. And whether later that evening or the next day, we wake up and we feel the same. Right? It was funny when I was doing, a couple of weeks ago, when I was kind of looking around for kind of things around electronics and devices, kind of looking at some of the research in terms of people's use and just what's going on and how it affects your brains and, you know, a lot of very interesting things. I rediscovered something I had heard years ago, and maybe you all know this, that, and maybe it's that the largest use that people use the internet for is for pornography. Everybody know that? I mean, that's like the major traffic. Worldwide, pornography. Now, that's interesting, isn't it? Because where does it begin? It begins with the body. And the body discovering what? Pleasure. Right? Right. So, a sexual experience is basically a physically pleasant experience, right? Yeah, very simple, you know. like when you're hungry eating, pleasant experience. And yet, there's a whole industry that has endlessly taken that very basic human experience and turned it into something very different, doesn't it? You know, I thought about it, I reflected a while ago, you know, with the Me Too movement, which I guess is still going on. You know, everybody know what the Me Too movement is? Yeah. And it was very interesting to me because the whole thing was about what? What? Power, right? You know, powerful men using power, you know, to manipulate women. You see what I'm saying? It was all about power and politics and gender issues, which, of course, is true. But where in all of that was anybody talking about sexuality? You know, and even something as biblical as lust. I mean, what were these guys up to? I mean, why were they doing it? Because they wanted to what? I mean, can you see? I mean, it was all about what? Sexuality. They wanted pleasure. Right? But where in any of this discussion of the Me Too movement and of these men was anybody talking about unbridled lust? And the emptiness of these men's lives. I mean, most of them were married. You know, man. I mean, I won't go into that, but I mean, it's like, you know, it's like, you know, can you see that something that is very simple and pleasurable, very, right, is it gets out there and it becomes obsessive and compulsive. And basically, you can see endlessly feeding on wholesomeness. And the interesting thing about a lot of these guys is, you know, if you looked at some of their histories, like, you know, like any other kind of addiction, it often begins what? Kind of simply, with a pleasant experience. And when you have a pleasant experience, if you're not careful, you want what? Another pleasant experience, and another pleasant experience. And before, what happens is the craving for pleasant sensory experience leads you into all kinds of unwholesome ways. Is that clear? And so if there's no self-awareness, both to the psychological process of what's going on, but also to any criteria that you have in your mind about what's wholesome, what's not wholesome, and in this experience I'm having, what is it nurturing? So the Buddha calls this, you know, the four nutriments, the nutriment of sense impressions. And am I nourishing myself with something that is wholesome or something that is unwholesome? Right? So when so many people just for hours and hours and hours consume pornography, is that wholesome for their minds? Is that wholesome for their sexuality? You see? Does it be clear? I mean, these are the kind of things we need to be asking ourselves. Are the things that I'm consuming, you know, and we're going back, you know, movies and websites and the news, you know, what is this nurturing in me? Right? And in one of the teachings of Thich Nhat Hanh, he goes, and even conversations are things we're doing with our mouth, we're seeing the person, we're hearing the person, you know, we're using our senses to relate to people. Even conversations. Is this conversation nurturing what is wholesome in me, nurturing what is wholesome in the other person, or not? And remember, sense impressions. So this conversation, you know, if I'm just gonna, you know, talking about people very negatively, and they're talking about people very negatively, and we're just feeling so proud of ourselves, and everybody else is, you know, the world's full of jerks, and, you know, and we're just, you know, what kind of impression is that leaving our mind, which is going to condition the way we show up in future conversations? See, there's no free lunch here. If you understand the Alaya Vijnana, we understand that, you know, it's not just in public, but even when we're home, the kind of experiences we're having. Now, again, you know, in the next two nutriments, we'll learn about will and volition and even mind states, how that's conditioning us. But here we're talking about sense impressions. That's conditioning me. And to, you know, how many people have decided one day, I'm going to make a change in my life? You know, it could be even anything, you know, exercise, diet, people, you know, this, that, I'm going to sleep more, this, I'm not going to do this. Has anybody ever made a strong vow to change their behavior? Has anybody ever kind of had the experience that it's not that easy? Right? You know, why is it not that easy? Here you are, you're very clear, you know, this is not good for me, I'm going to change it. Right? I mean, what could be simpler than that? But what are we missing? Remember the eggplant? See? You know, the part of us that wants to change is up here. It's a little green part. And we're pretending that the rest of the eggplant doesn't exist. Right? Is that clear? So you know, so understanding that everything we think and act and feel is leaving an impression, and similar impressions over time become stronger formations, we have to be aware that's conditioning us. And sometimes it's conditioning us very strongly. And we have been conditioning our minds through our experiences since childhood. Okay? So depending on how many decades you can count in your life, you can kind of see how big your eggplant is. Right? So some of you who are younger here, you might be in better shape because you have a smaller eggplant. Doesn't mean you don't have an eggplant, but it's smaller. But every decade it gets bigger. Right? And so we have to be aware that even though we might say with age comes wisdom, etc., but also with age comes a bigger eggplant. So that's why for younger people, if you can kind of get wisdom at a younger age when you've got a smaller eggplant, things will be better for you. Well, let me open it up a little bit, okay? I mean, this is something that's very, I think, accessible. I think these teachings, I think I mentioned earlier, these teachings on the four nutriments are not a very popular, well-known teaching within Buddhism. And it's really part of, I think, the genius of Thich Nhat Hanh that he found this sutra and these teachings and really saw how relevant. Because again, I think in our culture, we call ourselves a consumer culture. You see what I'm saying? We understand, oh, we're a consumer culture. Right? I mean, we're basically endlessly consuming. And that's what the Buddha said. Except we're not consuming with this kind of bigger awareness of wholesome and unwholesome. We're consuming in a way where we're endlessly just wanting to consume pleasurable experiences or buying things or getting things or, you know, accumulating things because we think they're going to give us pleasure. And when we feel pleasure and feel good, we don't feel bad. We don't feel uneasy. For the moment, we don't feel stressed. We don't feel that deep down, perhaps underlying sense of separation or disconnection or emptiness. That's basically what kind of feeling? Unpleasant. So this is simple, I think very accessible, and yet very profound, and very much, you know, affects all of us, right? I mean, we're all in this together. So any questions, comments, please, you know, totally open. Anything doesn't sit well with you? Yes. Well, give me. Can you give me an example? It doesn't have to be personal. Just make it up. So, if
we're to stay in a toxic relationship, that would be a decision. Mm-hmm. If you knew it wasn't right. Okay. That came back onto the experience in a negative way.
Well, again, I mean, what is your name?
Ryan.
So Ryan's asking. I'm just doing it because this is being live streamed. So Ryan's just asking about kind of more. Kind of how to do it. What does it mean? So if you're in a toxic relationship and you've made a decision to stay there, see, it's not about that, okay? Whether you decide yes or no is one thing. But let's talk about what Ryan just called, based on kind of how we talked about things today. When you call something a toxic relationship, because what is it nourishing in you? When you call it a toxic relationship, you know what I'm saying? That has a meaning to you. So you're calling a relationship a toxic relationship because in you it doesn't nourish things that are wholesome? Okay. Right? Okay. It's not nourishing things that are wholesome. It's nourishing things that are... So if you say they're toxic, you mean what? What would mean? They're nourishing things that are...
It's a long story, but...
I don't need the whole story, but just in terms of what it... Kind of where it leaves you.
I broke up with my girlfriend 4 years on Monday. Mm-hmm. It's like the best decision I've ever made, but I'm kind of dealing with why I was in it for so long. I was in it for 4 years, so I'm trying to figure out in my head why I was in it. You know, that's why I asked that question.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think sort of unpacking causation, right? So in the same way Dr. Reddy kind of looked... You know, what's causing all these people to have really such toxicity in their body that they're so sick, needing this, you know, is helpful, right? Why is it helpful? So you don't do it again. Okay. I mean, so we don't need to obsess about the past or kind of beat yourself up, you know, about the past. But, you know, kind of understanding, if you said... Gee, I've been aware that it was a toxic relationship for 4 years, and yet I stayed in it. I think getting to know yourself better and realizing, you know, why you were doing that could be helpful. But I think the main thing for you is knowing the difference between a wholesome and an unwholesome relationship. You see, it's really like everything else I've said, and I think that's the condition with most people's lives these days, is they really don't go into life with that criteria, you know. Is what, you know, it's like when we, you know, when I won't go back into the internet, you know, which is so easily to get lost in, you know, to step back and go, what I'm doing, is this nurturing wholesomeness in me? Or is this, you know, nurturing unwholesomeness in me? Right? Or is this just kind of wasting time, which we might say is a little unwholesome. It's not as unwholesome as pure unwholesomeness, but it may not be wholesome. Right? And again, it's, you know, these things all interweave. You know, again, is, you know, do I, and again, this is the next section on will and volition, is like, where am I putting my energy in this life? You know, where do I want to go in this life? How do I want to be in this life? Right? It's like, what kind of relationships, you know, what kind of relationship do I want to be in? This is like Ryan just in his own reflection, contemplation. You know, what kind of person do I want to be with? What kind of person do I want to be? Right? You know, how do I want to show up in relationship? You know, am I coming from a wholesome place? Or am I coming from an unwholesome place? You see what I'm saying? So I think once you get the template of looking at things this way, you can kind of shine the light of this teaching in many areas of our life. Does that answer your question? Okay, thank you, Ryan. Yes.
So the best way to shrink it
Yeah, so let me, was that the question? Yeah, good question. So this is, again, I repeat it. So the question is about the eggplant, which is just a metaphor for, I mean, nothing against eggplants, okay? for our minds, okay? Yeah, so the question is, yeah, so what do you do about the eggplant, especially if it's an unwholesome one, right? Yeah. Well, that is why, you know, we call our path a path of healing and transformation. Okay? Now, when you talk about healing, you talk about you're really healing your eggplant. Well, maybe I better stop there. All right? But you know, it's this acknowledgement that under the conscious mind, under our conscious functioning, there are parts within our mind you know, that are unwholesome. They're wounded. They're scared. They're lonely. They're angry. They're, you know what I'm saying, right? So that's, those places need to be healed, and those places need to be transformed. Transformed into what? Into their opposite. I mean, if you can ask, over time, right? It sort of begins up here at the conscious actions in the present, but over time. What is the difference between let's take somebody over here, just totally deluded, totally narcissistic, totally full of negative emotions. I won't mention any names. And okay, and over here you have a Buddha, right? Now, what is the difference? The difference is this person over here. Their storehouse conscious is just filled with unwholesomeness. Okay? I mean, this is at this end of the continuum. Totally unwholesome. Over here, a Buddha, totally wholesome. All right? Now, it doesn't mean this person over here doesn't have the potential to be a Buddha. But they have to go through a process of healing and transformation. Now, mindfulness and meditation is one excellent aid to that, as well as many other things. I mean, you know, because we act in the world. The question, you know, we're acting all the time. Our senses are alive all the time. Mindfulness gives us an awareness of where we are and what's happening and reminds us of wholesomeness and unwholesomeness. I am mindful, I'm aware that in all the actions of my body, speech, and mind, there are things that I can do that support wholesomeness, that support my healing and transformation, and there are things that I can do that are unwholesome, that will continue to keep me, where I am. And there are lots of actions that are just neutral. They're not doing anything for me. Right? Is that clear? It's like filler. And I've said it, you know, in prior talks. I think in our culture, We have risen empty experiences that appear as something whatever to an art that has never been seen in human history. We have the ability to keep ourselves busy and stimulated, consuming experiences that are basically, you know, for what? You know? That are in the moment kind of interesting, or, you know, you see what I'm saying? I mean, it's unless we step back and go, you know, what am I doing? You know, how did I just spend the last 3 hours? See, that's mindfulness. Mindfulness is not just being mindful of the tea, that I'm drinking tea. Mindfulness is mindfulness of your body, mind, of your actions. Awareness and having a criteria about wholesome and unwholesome. It's like in meditation, we have criteria. Am I with the practice or am I not? Right? Am I concentrated or am I distracted? Knowing the difference between the two is being mindful. I often joke with people, you know, they go, well, isn't mindfulness everything? No. I mean, you know, to be driving my car over the cliff and going, I am very mindful that I am now approaching the edge of the cliff, and now I am going over the cliff, and now I am falling to the bottom. You know, it's like, well, you get an A for mindfulness, but, you know, there are other criteria you need to be aware of. Is that clear? So, I mean, does that help you? Yeah. So it's not shrinking. You know, it is what it is. I mean, for whatever years, decades, or lifetimes you have been accumulating your storehouse, it is what it is, right? It's not about shrinking it, it's about transforming it, okay? Healing and transforming. And a lot of that has to do with understanding Buddhist psychology and the storehouse, to understand when things come up in you, or you have impulses or desires, where are they coming from? You see? Like, that's a good question. Like, where is this coming from? I mean, I was just, you know, walking down the street. You know, where is this coming from? Why am I? Well, it's coming from my Alaya. Right? Is that clear? The ice cream in the freezer is not calling your name. I mean, we're all intelligent people. Is that clear? You know, you have done this before. You have opened the freezer before. You have taken it out. You have given yourself a pleasurable experience. Is that clear? That is why you're going there now. That's the only reason you're going there. And until we kind of wake up and understand, you know, that's all that's going on here. You know, my present life is being conditioned by my storehouse consciousness. We might call that the past. Okay? But it's not simply the past, like everything's equal. As I said, the impressions become formations. They kind of accumulate, so they have more power. Yes. The children come in at what time? 11:45, yes.
I just want to ask whether you can comment on the relation between going that path. When you say you have come to suffering, you already know that, that's why you are.
Yeah, right.
But there is suffering.
Suffering in the what?
In repeating this.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, there you go. And that's Buddhism, right? Yeah, so the question is, you know, what's the relationship between, you know, the short-term, we're talking about short-term gain versus long-term consequence. And that's what always we're dealing with. You know, I've often said here, to be a spiritual person, to practice the Dharma, is to be a big picture person, not a, you know, small picture. Right? In this, for this one evening, in this one hour, if I go get a big bowl of ice cream, so what? You see? That's small picture. That's like this in the moment. Right? But big picture means, yeah, where am I going in my life? You know, what's that effect on my body? What's that effect on my cholesterol? What's that effect on my, you know, meeting my emotional needs with food? You see what I mean? There could be all kinds of things. So that's mindfulness. You see, that I'm aware, right, that in this moment, you know, what is drug and alcohol addiction about? I mean, which is what? Epidemic in our society? I mean, what is it about? Yeah, short people getting hooked because of short-term pleasure, short-term ending of suffering, and yet the consequence is horrendous for themselves and everybody they care about and society. There it is. You know, and yeah, I think it's so that waking up, you know, I mean, I think addicts and alcoholics, you know, and food, I mean, sex addicts, food, it's, you know, it's like everything's an addiction these days. Shopping addicts, I mean, what's not an addiction? Now, internet addiction, right? Game addiction, right? I mean, this word is so common because it implies that what began as a simple, sensory, pleasurable experiences has become, because of grasping, because of, you know, it's out, and, you know, and the result is you know, as you said, unwholesome, toxic, negative impact on myself and others. And, you know, that's, to me, that's what, you know, spiritual, you know, whatever it means. I don't like to use the word spiritual, but, you know, it's like becoming an aware person. We're self-aware. You know, I know what I'm doing. I'm aware of the consequences of, you know, anybody, you know, if you've ever been a child or if you've ever been a parent with children, you know, one of the hardest, I mean, you know, you're trying to deal with these kids is what? You know, the consequences of their actions. It's like, what? You know, I mean, you know, whether they're young kids or wow, teenagers or, you know. Right? I mean, you know, it's like, I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, that's what you're trying to get them. Oh, short-term pleasure? Yeah, I understand. You know, but it may have a long-term effect on you. You know, but you know, when I was a therapist and did family therapy years ago, you know, and you have these kids who don't go to school, you know, they're 16 years old. It's like, you know, how can you argue with drugs, sex, and rock and roll? You know what I'm saying? It's all short-term pleasure. I mean, if that's their mind, you know, you're trying to tell them, you know, you're ruining your life. You're going to be long-term. But they don't see it, do they? And many of us are continuing to live our life that way. So we'll stop here and thank you very much. So again, please just use this as a way to reflect yourself.